ago, I had a dream about this time of year. It was one of those really vivid and confusing dreams. I was supposed to celebrate that service for Christ the King Sunday in a strange church I've never seen before, but which seemed to be attached to the New York City Macy's store with blue elevators. But the part that I think fits for today is that the church hangings in my dream were purple. Some of the clergy were wearing green, some purple, and I thought I ought to be wearing red, but the only thing I could find was one single rose-colored soul. White or gold never even occurred to me. Now, not to delve too deeply in whatever my psyche is trying to tell me with this dream, it still seems that this confusion about the nature of the feast of Christ the King isn't entirely in my own head. Although it's the last Sunday of the green season after Pentecost, coming right before we begin a new liturgical year next Sunday with Advent, our reading is not from Mark's Gospel, which we've been reading all year. Instead, it's from John. And it's part of what we hear every Good Friday. As a matter of fact, John's Gospel is what we hear all through Holy Week after Matthew or Mark, the Passion Gospel on Palm Sunday. And the words king and kingdom don't feature very prominently in the gospel as a whole, but they're important when they do appear. It's not the kind of triumphant king or kingship referred to in the Revelation reading we just heard, nor is it the post-resurrection kind of character of Eastertide. It's not even the triumphant return of Christ that we hear about at Christmas or in Advent. By the way, on those feasts, we use white vestments. No. This reading is smack in the middle of Holy Week. Jesus is before Pilate, the Roman prefect of the province of Judea. He's on trial for his life, accused of treason, and religious authorities want the Romans to make this little problem go away. So what kind of king is Jesus anyway? All four Gospels have Pontius Pilate ask the same question first. Are you the king of the Jews? Three of them have Jesus answer, you have said so. But only in John does Jesus go on the offensive. Do you say this of your own accord, or did others say it to you about me? Did somebody push you up to this? Pilate backpedals. I'm not a Jew. Your own handed you over. What have you done? Jesus, again, doesn't answer the question asked, but the first question. My kingdom is not of this world. Pilate sees an opening. So you are a king. Jesus' reply tells God, for this I was born, to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to me. And Pilate's reply, one verse beyond our reading for today, is the famous line, what is truth? What Pilate doesn't get is truth is standing right in front of him. Ironically, it's Pilate who writes truth in the sign Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews, that's put over Jesus' head on the cross. He refuses to change it too. What I've written, I've written. Pilate actually acknowledges what he doesn't recognize. And at the palace, throughout this conversation, it's Pilate who's really on the rack, stretching, running back and forth between the porch where the religious authorities have come to complain, and Jesus inside, back and forth and back and forth. Not sort of very kingly behavior, is it? He's madly trying to say, secure his position. He's playing power politics, but from a position of fear. Jesus' kingdom works differently. Jesus' kingdom is about the relationship, not the power, not the property. Jesus' kingdom confronts the way Pilate and all others, including sometimes us, confront the fundamental idea of how the world works. So Jesus is lifted up on the cross. And the Greek word, lifted up, means both lifted up and exalted. In John's account, This lifting up, this exaltation is the triumph and the victory. It's one unified, saving event. Crucifixion, resurrection, ascension, the whole thing encapsulated in that lifting up. It's all God's plan from the beginning. It's not the passion account of the other Gospels. It's real enough. You're very real. But Jesus is not ever defeated or set back. It's the completion of Jesus' mission, his glorification. This obedience is what sets all things right again. He was born to testify to the truth, and he's done so even to the point of death. What truth is it that he testifies to? The truth that God came among us in flesh and blood, in person. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to me. Further, that we belong to the truth. We belong to Jesus. Our identity is reformed in Christ as we're marked in baptism. So we're branded in baptism. We belong to Christ. We're Christ's own. We are to listen to the one who, as the passage from Philippians has it, became obedient to the point of death, even death on the cross. What a peculiar idea of kingship, where the truth is executed and thereby saves. Sure sets political theory on its head. Herod doesn't need to worry about his little patch of Judea. This kingdom is a lot bigger than that, more extensive, more insidious. Truth is executed, and see, it triumphs. As do we who belong to the truth, who belong to Jesus. As the early church added, the cross is our axis mundi, the center of the world, which unites heaven and hell and the whole world in space and time. Christ reigns from the center of the world as crucified king. Through the cross, we are incorporated, literally embodied, into Christ's death, resurrection, and ascension, and we're grafted into the life of the Holy Trinity. So actually, I guess, white or gold, the colors of kingship, are the right colors for the day. Just as the Holy Week hymn has it, fulfilled is all that David told. In true prophetic song of old, how God, the nation's king,